Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the On Point Speech and Debate podcast. My name is Tyler Barron from Region 3, or for those of you who ask me every single tournament, the lesser-known West Coast region that does not have Chenlo. In today's episode, Luke will interview Gabriel Zylstra from Region 6 on consistent debating and debating a complex resolution well. As always, we hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome back to the On Point podcast. Today I'm joined by Gabriel Zylstra. Now, Mr. Zylstra has actually been a pretty good NCFCAer. He's competed in a lot of things and he's broken in a lot of different things. But this year particularly, he's had a good amount of success in Lincoln Douglas. He plays first in Lincoln Douglas at the online fall debate only mixer, as well as the Milwaukee Region 6 qualifier. And just this past month, or I guess it would be last month, he plays second at the Black Mountain National Open. And today I'm going to be talking with Gabriel about consistency in Lincoln Douglas and numerous other factors that concern Lincoln Douglas, especially coming from a team policy perspective. This year, I think it'll be quite interesting. So thank you so much for joining me today, Mr. Zylstra.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. Well, before we talk about Lincoln Douglas, I think it's important we talk about team policy first, because that's what you've done most recently, right? At this past qualifier?
Yeah, I had no idea what I was doing, but it was fun.
So what made you decide to do team policy at that qualifier?
Well, I'd never done TP before. Believe it or not, I've done NCFCA for like since 2019, and I've actually never done TP. So I just kind of wanted to try it out once before I graduate, since this is my last year, just have that experience.
What do you think was the biggest change between your transition from LD to team policy?
I feel like in TP, there's a lot of reading evidence that you have not read yet. So like reading it for the first time in the round, which is a bit tricky because you don't know ahead of time like how to cite it or how to quote it. And so sometimes you'll make little errors.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing that stood out to me that I didn't actually anticipate fully.
Do you think there's a difference in the type of arguments being run in team policy versus Lincoln Douglas? Like, obviously, you have to refute the arguments in Lincoln Douglas or team policy. No matter what type of debate, you still have to refute the arguments. But do you think there's just a different feel to refuting the arguments in team policy that isn't so similar to Lincoln Douglas, even though they're both debate styles? Is that one of the things that you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was, it seems like a lot of TP arguments are not as personalized as LD arguments, right? So with LD, you can kind of get creative to some degree and like come up with the arguments you personally think are convincing. And that's like a really important part of LD. But for TP, you can just kind of, take arguments from anywhere. Somebody else has a brief, you just take those arguments and repeat them. And, not saying that doesn't require intellect or attention, obviously it does, but it's a lot less personalized, I guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now that I've got my TP questions out of the way, I think it's important to stick to Lincoln Douglas this episode. So Lincoln Douglas this year, I'd say that you're probably one of the most consistent debaters in general, since you've won multiple tournaments, placed second at North Carolina, probably with the exception of Chenlo and team policy. And so with this consistent LD placing, is this something that you kind of expected going into this year, or is it just something that you think is luck? What are your thoughts on all of these wins that you've had and this high rankings that you've received?
Well, it's tricky because I was definitely not expecting, I was expecting to do better last year, or expecting to do better than I did last year. But I wasn't expecting to be, super consistent. And even this year, I haven't been fully consistent. Like, I didn't break at the Minnesota mixer that I went to. Last year, actually the past 2 years, I haven't placed at nationals. I've gone 1-5 at the last two nationals I've gone to. So, I mean, coming off of that, I was not really expecting to do super well. But yeah, it's been fun. I think this resolution in particular I just enjoy and, you know, works well for me.
That's interesting. Well, hopefully you'll have better look at nationals this year. But what do you think changed from this year to last year? Is there anything really that changed? Is it something the same, like with your arguments? Do you think that the reason why you sometimes do pretty good is because you're pretty consistent in your performance over each round? Or is it that you stick to the same arguments consistently? Is there some particular aspect of consistency that you resemble in your debates?
Well, man, I think there's a lot of factors. I mean, a big thing is experience. I'm a super senior, right? So
yeah,
I'm more experienced than a lot of other people. And, you know, experience is something where you only really see it pay off year to year, right? Because from tournament to tournament, you have more experience, but so do your opponents. But then once you come to that next year and all of the, you know, the seniors, the most experienced people graduate, then I think you can notice that payoff. And so, yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest factors. I think some of it might even be with at least, you know, certain, probably particularly in region, some of it has to do with reputation. Like, people have heard, oh, Gabriel Zylstra, you know, maybe they watched one of my speeches, or, you know, maybe they watched one of my debates, or they just heard about my placing at a tournament. And so then they kind of have an expectation, okay, this guy is a somewhat decent debater. Whereas, you know, even if there's somebody who maybe is better than me, but actually is not, hasn't, you know, been around as long as I am, as long as I have, they might not, you know, the judge might not expect them to be as good, even if they are that good. I don't know. That's sort of just a guess. I'm not totally certain.
That's interesting, because I would say at least last year, I would definitely debate differently depending upon like who I'm going to be debating. Like, I just see that I'm going to be debating this person who's won this tournament, and I just start freaking out. So that's definitely an interesting take. I haven't thought about that before. Would you say that in round, you're consistent? And sorry for going back to consistency so much, but I'm just trying to nail this a little bit further. With consistency, do you think one of the aspects that affects your performance in tournaments is your consistency in terms of your performance in rounds? Because last year, one of the problems that I had coming from a first-year LDR last year is that I would have incredible rounds and then I would have a terrible off round. So is consistency in terms of performance in every single round something that's definitely affects the outcome of how you place in tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, one off round, especially if it's an out round, can, you know, totally change your performance. Yeah, and I think a big factor of that is just being comfortable with debating. So, you know, for somebody who's newer, you know, when I was really new, I was nervous with pretty much every round. You know, every round was a big challenge that I was really nervous about. But I think once you just get a little bit more comfortable with debating and more used to debating, then it just seems like, you know, another Tuesday. And I think that allows you to be more consistent because you're not being thrown off by like your own nervousness.
Yeah, that makes more sense. And thank you for bearing with me through the consistency section. You know, I just needed to have something for the title, right? Well, anyways, so moving along to your LD process, what was your process going into this year for Lincoln Douglas? What things did you look into to research? How did you approach this year? Do you have like the same style of research as you do moving into a resolution? Can you just run me through the whole process as far back as you can take me and how that sort of developed as you approached the tournament season?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't really have much of a like formal process at all. I was kind of, you know, figuring things out as I went. I think doing, you know, Ziggy was helpful, but really where I started was just reading, just doing research. I would especially recommend for anybody who's new, reading the Stanford Encyclopedia article on rationalism versus empiricism. That has been so unbelievably helpful for this year. I mean, like 90% of what you need to know about this resolution comes from that article. so helpful. It explains it so in depth. But yeah, I didn't have a super formal process. Mainly, I started out with kind of reading, sort of toying around with arguments, seeing, you know, where things broke down. I did Ziggy, and I actually totally changed my neg case after Ziggy, because it was just so, my neg case was so hard to understand. Even I was having trouble understanding my own arguments. And so I was thinking, well, if I'm writing these arguments and I don't fully understand them, how can I expect my judge to understand them in a 45-minute debate round, right? I've been researching this for a long time, and I still don't fully understand it. So I need to find a new argument, right?
Right.
I would definitely, though, recommend writing your own case. Like, that's a really important part of at least my process. And I think in general, like, it's important to have an argument you understand, something that seems personally, it makes sense to you, right? A lot of times you can tell when somebody's running a club case or something that somebody else wrote, just because they don't really understand their own arguments, because they didn't actually come up with them. They don't know, like, what is the thought process towards that conclusion. So yeah, writing your own case, depending on your style, you might want to totally pre-write it, or you might want to just have some bullet points. I mean, different things work for different people. And then, you know, practice. I mean, Ziggy was super helpful in that respect.
Yeah. And I think maybe this is something that you picked up on from doing team policy at this last tournament, is that when you receive a brief from someone else, you often don't know what you're talking about. You're just using the arguments that are on that brief. You're reading the pieces of evidence, but you don't really have as good of a grasp of the case as if you actually wrote the brief. And I think that's also kind of similar to like writing your own LD case. Even outside of debate, like writing your own papers or actually like looking into something before you discuss it or talk about it, it really increases your comprehension of the subject overall. And it allows you to be better able to defend it. And I think the same could be said about Lincoln Douglas. And I think that's a really good point that you presented. So with writing your own case, do you try to include simplicity over the quality of your arguments, especially considering this year? And I'd say like a follow-up question to that is, as the season has progressed, do you think that it has led to higher quality debates because the judges are more understanding of the resolution and this has led to more complex cases? So I'll have you give a whack at that.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, honestly, I think that's probably the biggest challenge this year is, you know, balancing nuance and clarity and accuracy with being understandable and relatable. That's a difficult balancing act. I think, yes, the quality of argumentation has increased slowly and steadily over the course of the year. As judges understand more and as competitors understand more. But it is a difficult balancing act. The strategy I use is basically I try not to sacrifice philosophical accuracy, but I'll be accurate and I'll explain something accurately. So I'll make some point like, this is an epistemological debate. And if you're a first-time judge, you're like, what in the world does epistemological mean? What? You know, it sounds like a random, you know, word salad, right? But so I'll make a point like that. And then afterwards, I'll just explain in simple terms what that means. So I'll make a point like, this is an epistemological debate. And epistemology is the realm of philosophy that deals with the question, how do we know what we know? So I think that, you know, has some disadvantages. It does take extra time, but personally, I find it to be worth it. That way you can make an accurate and nuanced point, but then break it down and make it understandable for judges.
Yeah. So how exactly did you tackle the issue of, you know, judges not really understanding something? I know you mentioned to break down terms for them, but I'd say like in general, like me as a TPer watching a LD debate for the first time, I was totally lost, especially this year. So how do you explain things simply to the judge while also refuting the opponent's arguments, especially if the opponent has like confusing arguments or arguments that are highly philosophical? Do you just go back to the basics and bring them back to the principles that the resolution is built on? Or do you instead engage with their arguments at a higher philosophical level, even though the judges might not understand?
That's a tricky question. I think engaging at that philosophical level is something that's important, and I'll try to do that. But also, you do need to make it understandable to the judge. Otherwise, it might as well be a moot point, right? They don't know what your argument is, so they can't tell if it's valid. So, you know, if my opponent makes a complex argument, maybe they say something like, there's a difference between what triggers belief and what justifies belief. And if they haven't already explained that, well, then when I'm responding, I have to explain it in order for the judge to understand why my response is correct. Actually, I feel like that can almost gain you rapport with the judges if you are explaining your opponent's arguments. And I think the rebuttals can be a really good opportunity to further explain the resolution. Also cross-ex as well.
That's good. And would you say that, or if not, what is the biggest challenge that you faced this year with this resolution? And did you take any meaningful steps or practical steps to overcome this challenge, or was it just a process of experimentation?
I think it was the one you mentioned earlier, basically just balancing accuracy with clarity. Because there's a lot of people that, you know, I get my pet peeve this year is LD debaters that are framing the debate in a non-historical way. So if somebody comes up and they say rationalism is reason and empiricism is experience, that's one of my, you know, pet peeves when people do that. Because I want to have the more, you know, historical philosophical debate.
Right.
But there is a benefit to doing that as well, in that it's more relatable for the judges and it's more understandable for the judges. And there are a lot of people that have done really well with that. Margaret Lindemann, she actually won LD at the last tournament in our region. And she's really good at breaking down these, you know, taking these philosophical concepts and sort of simplifying them to a level that the judges can understand. And maybe that sacrifices, you know, the historical aspect of the debate, which she sort of moves away from, but it also gives her other benefits. Personally, I like the historical debate. I like to focus on that. But it's definitely a challenge, especially if you're going against somebody who frames the resolution differently. And, you know, almost half of my debate rounds this year have been framing debates. Like, before we even have the debate, we have to ask, what is the debate even about? And that's really tricky.
So basically, like, definition debates, so that you're all on the same terms, right?
Yeah. And nobody likes a definition debate, but you kind of have to have it.
Yep. All right. So moving along to, I guess, some things that you've picked up in general, not specific to this year, but I guess over the long years that you've had in the NCFCA League, what would you say are some tips that you've picked up along the way as you've done Lincoln Douglas debate for so long? And what are some strategies that you've seen a lot of people use that are effective? Maybe some strategies that you've tried out that aren't so effective? And perhaps what are some that you have tried that you don't see many people trying that you think they should?
Okay, one strategy I tried that was not effective was a balanced neg. Now, technically, I think balanced negs are actually valuable. And for anybody who doesn't know, a balanced neg is basically a neg case where you say, I'm not arguing the reverse of the resolution, I'm just arguing against the resolution. So for example, if you say we should value cheesecake over pie, then the negative can come up and say, well, I'm not going to argue we should value pie over cheesecake, I'm going to say we should value them both equally. And technically, I think that is a valid argument you can make. But it just kind of, it looks weak to the judges. It looks like you're avoiding the argument. And so I tried that in 2021, and I was not successful at all with that. Judges did not like it. Some tips that I would have that for strategies that I've, you know, used that I think are more effective. I think a mistake a lot of people make is over relying on anecdotal examples and quotes. They treat them as if they're evidence. And obviously quotes and anecdotes are helpful, and I use them all the time, but they shouldn't be used as evidence. Really, the purpose of these is, you know, examples can be used to, you know, illustrate your point through an example, or they can show a more personal aspect of the debate. You know, what are the personal impacts? But they don't really serve as evidence in and of themselves. And then quotes are also helpful, but just a quote from an authority. You know, if you say John Locke said this, therefore this is true, that's not a very good argument. I think what it does help to do is maybe it can lend credibility to your argument, or, you know, maybe a certain person put something in a really eloquent way, and so you want to present it in their words. But by itself, just saying, well, a smart person said this is true, that doesn't really prove your point. And so I see a lot of new debaters especially really rely on those. I would recommend trying to find your own like logical argumentation and evidence aside from those things.
Yeah. And something that I've seen a lot, especially with quotes, or at least I've heard a lot, is people use quotes in a way to essentially be their argument and not be the support for their argument. And in that way, I think there can be a line that's drawn between those two things, because in some way, as you mentioned, a quote can definitely be used to bolster your argument by wording it in a way that you think can be said better than you can. But in a different way, quotes can also be used against you. If I'm not mistaken, I think there's some quotes that you can reference the people that use those quotes and say, well, they actually agreed with this point later in their life with philosophers. And so would you recommend using quotes or attacking quotes in that way? Or is quotes just kind of like an insignificant thing in debate rounds and don't really matter much to the reason for decision at the end of the day?
Well, it can definitely be rhetorically effective. Like if somebody brings up, you know, philosopher A, and they say, see, he supports my point. And then you're like, actually, no, he was an empiricist, so he supports my point. That can be really rhetorically effective, especially if they're over-relying on that as their evidence. I mean, Immanuel Kant, you can interpret him as a rationalist or as an empiricist. Like, there are certain quotes of his where I'll hear people read the first half of the quote on the affirmative or read the second half of the quote on the negative, and both of them will say, ah, this quote supports my side. But it's like, you just read the other half of the quote, and it's like, well, it's not that clear. But yeah, I think that's why it's important to have more substantive evidence besides just this guy said it, because that can be used against you really easily. I think like a lot of people, they don't realize that evidence is, for any given claim, the same rules of evidence apply in LD as in TP, right? So if you're in a TP round and you say eminent domain is harmful, you need evidence for that. If you're in an LD round, like last year's resolution, and you say eminent domain is harmful, you still need the same kind of evidence to prove that given claim. It just happens that TP tends to deal with things that require more outside sources, and LD tends to deal with things that require more logic. But it's not as if you magically don't need evidence for a claim just because it's an LD round. And I think sometimes people don't realize that.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing it put in words like that, because I've never thought about it in that way. So that's really interesting. Thank you for chiming in there. With tips and tricks that you've picked up over the past few years, have you also done drills that have helped you in a certain instance for a certain set of skills? Or do you really just focus on practice rounds?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, practice rounds are super helpful. Doing a lot of tournaments as well is super helpful, because then you're getting practice in your actual rounds. Obviously, that requires, you know, travel, and it's difficult to set up. But yeah, practice rounds are super helpful, especially for the early tournaments, because going into the early tournaments, a lot of people are just not prepared. And if you are prepared and you've done a lot of research, and you've already had a bunch of, you know, you already have these practice rounds in your arsenal, then you have this head start that a lot of other people don't. So yeah, practice rounds are super helpful, especially just for getting comfortable with the resolution.
Yeah. Do you do any type of drills or not really? You just take your practice rounds?
I've tried like piranha packing. Do you know what that is? It's like basically, yeah. Like you're it's basically like a cross X type thing. I don't know how to explain it. Most of what I've done is just practice rounds though.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Now, as we start concluding this episode, do you have like any last pieces of advice or tips that you would give to anyone who's going through LD this year, is struggling along LD with this resolution? Maybe they're having a great time reading about it, learning about it. For anyone really, do you have any parting pieces of advice?
Yeah, I mean, just be patient with yourself. Like nobody's a perfect debater. Everybody loses. And especially if you're a new debater, like you got to be patient with yourself, because like aside from a few like freakishly skilled people, for most people, it takes a lot of experience to start having success in NCFC. Like my first tournament, actually my whole first year, I never got any ranking except fifth and below in speeches. And so it just takes a lot of patience. You know, I was talking about earlier how you only see that progress kind of year to year. You could be working hard for all of 1 year and see no progress, but then the next year immediately see progress just because everybody's been practicing over the course of that year. And it's only when you have that reset that you actually see the progress. So yeah, just being patient with yourself is really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this interview, Gabriel Zylstra, and all of the feedback that you've put in. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.